Are you ready for the most ridiculous internet sports show you have ever seen? Welcome to React, home of the most outrageous and hilarious videos the web has to offer. So join me, Rocky Theus, and my co-host, Raiders Pro Bowl defensive end, Max Crosby, as we invite your favorite athletes, celebrities, influencers, entertainers in for an episode of games, laughs, and of course, the funniest reactions to the wildest web clips out there. Catch React on YouTube, and that is React, R-E-A-X-X. Don't miss it.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Regressing to the mean since 2015, it's the Hockey Pediocast with your host, Dmitry Filipovich.
Welcome to the Hockey Pediocast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and joining me for part two of our mega positional ranking series that we seem to do every year is my good buddy Andrew Berkshire. Andrew, what's going on, man?
Not much. Just, chilling out in the morning. Excited to get on the Pediocast once again. I broke down my two separate winger categories and mashed them together and moved some guys around based on my feelings. And here we are.
Based on your feelings. That's a new stat.
It's the best stat.
Mm-hmm. Yes. This is going to be a tricky podcast. You know, we did, for those of you that haven't checked it out yet, last week, Andrew and I did the top 20 centers. And we were talking before we went on air. We got pretty good feedback on that. I went back. I reviewed the tape. I reviewed our performance. I think we did pretty well. If I could redo my list, then I wouldn't even necessarily redo it because obviously just a couple games worth shouldn't change your opinion on stuff like this. But I think maybe we were underselling Evgeny Kuznetsov a little bit, although I feel like, you know, we had him at the borderline of the top 10, and we both sort of made the note that with a bigger role and the penalty killing duties and all that and so on and so forth, and seemingly how he gets better every single year, he had a case to, you know, sneak up really into that kind of top 5 to 7 or so range with a big season this year. So, you know, we weren't down on him by any means, but just kind of watching him this past week and how uniquely dominant he can be at times with the puck. They were playing the Leafs on Saturday, and it felt like he was definitively the best player on the ice in a game that featured quite a few good players. So that was kind of one thing that I wanted to make a note of. But otherwise, I'm pretty happy with how our centers podcast went.
Yeah, I feel like maybe we should have put Matthews number one.
Mm.
Just to align with the media narrative right now.
Yeah, I'm glad. And we also didn't get into McDavid versus Matthews, which I'm really proud of, and we're not going to do that on this show either. We do have a massive show ahead. And you know what? I think next week we're going to do defensemen, and I'm going to do goalies as well. I'm going to try to get someone who full-time covers goalies to do that with me, but you and I will do the defensemen. So there's a lot to look forward to, but on this show, we're going to do the wingers, and it is tricky. I honestly don't have a top 20. I have like 30 names written down in some order, and we're going to talk my way through it and try to weed some of them out, and then other guys kind of figure out where they align, because it's just so tricky, right? When you're smashing both left and right into here, there's such a glut of names and so many quality players, and it felt like it was kind of very subjective on my part trying to figure out whether I liked one guy over another at some point, especially in that bottom third or so.
Yeah, I feel like even from like almost like number 8 down to like 25, there isn't a ton of separation, mm-hmm. right? Or maybe 9 or 10 actually, but there's a huge, huge group among wingers that are just like really difficult to pick between. That's where I had the most trouble creating this list. And also, I feel like after number one, it was also like pretty tight within the top eight or nine as well. Like it's really tough to, like, I feel like for people listening who have you know, team affiliations or guys they really like, try not to focus too much on the number on this episode, because I don't think we're too focused on, I know it's a ranking episode, but yeah, if one guy's ahead of the guy that you like, realize that there's not much separation, and, you know, based on whatever happens in a couple of games, they could move up or down the list a couple spots. So I just thought that the top 10 is so stacked for wingers, it's pretty tough. There's not much separation.
It is, you're right. That's a key point. I think it's more so the actual conversations we're gonna have about these guys, and also sort of the neighborhood or the tier that we're putting them into, as opposed to actually the specific number. And I think there's, like, I don't know, I'd say probably like 15 or 16 guys that really should be in our top 20 here, and then I'd say that there's like another 15 to 20 guys, as you kind of alluded to there, that you can make a case for the final five spots. So it's that's why we're gonna do like a long honorable mentions, and then we're gonna get into the actual top 20. But you're right, hopefully fans don't get too upset if their favorite player doesn't make the top 20, because if he's in our honorable mentions, chances are he's probably a top 20 caliber of winger. We just couldn't squeeze him in. So let's run through some of those guys who ultimately you feel like didn't make the list, but are right there on the precipice and probably could, if you just kind of close your eyes and pick their name out of the hat instead.
Yeah, I had a few guys that really hurt to not put on my top 20. And, you know, I could be convinced any other day that they could be in there. But the four main guys for me that really I wanted to put in there, but I just couldn't find a spot ahead of the others, was Ricard Raquel, Nikolai Ehlers, Alex Radulov, and Chris Kreider.
So out of those guys, I agree. Alex Radulov did make my list, but he was in that, like, I have him 17th on mine. So he's like firmly in that tier of, like, if you wanted to bump him down to like 28th. Just because I'd be like, okay, yeah, I guess I'm not going to quibble with it too much. But yeah, exactly, all the other guys are on my list. I did notice when I was looking at yours, because, you know, I'm kind of just spitballing here and freewheeling on the fly. You actually published the list over at SportsCenter, and people should go read the written work. But you're really high on Chris Kreider on your list.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to necessarily say that my opinion of Chris Kreider is, you know, like, I'm not personally super high on him. I still harbor some resentment from being a Canadiens fan back in the day, and him, you know, taking out Carey Price and causing many years of problems there. Mm-hmm. But in terms of just the progression he's made as a player with and without the puck, he's just a three-zone player, incredibly versatile winger right now. He doesn't have the offensive punch of some of the other guys on this list, but he's got incredible impacts both in transition and on defense. So he's a guy that I couldn't like find a space in the top 20, but he's good enough everywhere that I couldn't not mention him at the same time.
Yeah, that's fair. And I feel like a guy like for me like that you did mention on that honorable mentions is Nick Ehlers. It's so tricky, because in the, like, when I think about him just as a player and sort of how what he brings to the table, it's, I think if I had to like create my perfect player, it would be a lot of what he does, where he's so dynamic on the fly. You know, he's a zone entry king. He draws a ton of penalties. He's just this like kind of like elusive guy in the offensive zone that no one can seem to get a good grasp on defensively. And at the same time, some of the other names on this list were just their offensive resumes and what they've been able to accomplish at this point of their careers kind of supersedes him, but he's obviously young enough and still his trajectory is still going upwards, so he could very easily crack this list. But like, you get into a philosophical debate, and I know you wrote this in your methodology, where typically in your rankings, I believe goal scorers kind of get favored a bit more than playmakers, and that's a really tough thing to sort of weigh and balance in your mind. Because, you know, when I was creating this list, I was going back and forth between teammates with like Nick Ehlers and Patrick Laine, and trying to figure out you know, how to value those two guys and what they bring to the table and which one's more valuable. And ultimately I settled with Line A just because I feel like, I don't know, philosophically, if you had to pick one of them, I feel like everyone would pick Patrick Laine, but that kind of feels unfair to what Nikola Ehlers is capable of and what he brings to the table.
Yeah, and I think you look at where the Jets are right now and the way they've started the season, and everyone's kind of down on the Nick Ehlers line. Mm-hmm. I think for the most part, you know, a 5-game sample is not enough to draw any conclusions. And yeah, he doesn't have any points, but I recently took a look at Brandon Tanev for the Winnipeg Free Press and like what is driving his good start to the season. And one thing that stood out when I was looking at the Jets was Nikolaj Ehlers is like, if not the best, a top 5 zone entry player in the entire NHL. And not just in terms of gaining the line, but what happens after he enters the zone, whether it's by a controlled entry, which he's among the best at, or even a dump in, it's incredible. Like, no one in the league turns those entries into scoring chances as frequently as Nick Ehlers does. So that tells me something about his ability to not just enter the offensive zone, but create something dynamic that happens attacking off the rush. And he's a special player. I think Christian Vesalainen has struggled a little bit to start the season. And, you know, Roslovich is an up and coming player who hasn't found, you know, his peak at all yet. He's just a kid, but Nikolaj Ehlers, look past the point totals this season and look at the last two seasons and remember who he is, because he is an absolutely incredible player. And for the Jets to be able to put him on the third line right now and actually, you know, not have any weaknesses in their top six is just ridiculous. It's what a embarrassment of riches they have at forward right now.
Yeah, I mean, when we did our centers podcast, you know, we had Mark Scheifele in our top 10 or just on the precipice of it, I believe. And then on this episode, whether it's with Wheeler or Laine or Ehlers or even Kyle Connor on the fringe, like, you can make a case for four wingers on their team on this list. It's bonkers. And then you get into their blue line, and obviously they have a top goalie now as well. So yeah, you're right. It is an embarrassment of riches. And I'm glad you brought up the zone entry component and sort of what he does when he enters the zone with it, because I thought last year in the latter half when they acquired Paul Stastny at the trade deadline, that combination with Stastny, Ehlers, and Laine was amongst my favorite lines in the league to watch, just because all the three skill sets complemented each other so well. And I thought that while he wouldn't get much of the attention or much of the love for what he was contributing to it, Nikolaj Ehlers' ability to enter the zone with possession and speed and sort of push back the defense a little bit created so much more space for Stastny and Laine to operate with. And that's kind of one of those things where, you know, it's kind of tricky to say that it won't get captured by the numbers, because in theory, if it's important and valuable to winning, it will manifest itself somewhere. You just kind of have to look for it and try to evaluate it and weigh things properly with the numbers. But at the same time, it's just one of those kind of geometrical structural things on the ice that I'm sure like his teammates appreciate playing with him so much because of what he is able to provide with that speed.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. He's a phenomenal player. I guess also that maybe some of the reasons why I've seen a few people be down on him was he wasn't, you know, at his peak in the playoffs either. Mm. But, you know, it was his first playoffs. He still was scoring a half point a game. He didn't score a goal, but he was, you know, getting some assists. So he's a guy that Jets fans, if you're nervous about him, don't be.
Yeah,
he's going to do his same thing he does every year. He's going to be great.
A name he didn't mention that honorable mentions that it's on mine is a Matthew Tkachuk.
Yes.
And
he's just outside my top 30.
Yeah.
Just.
It's tricky because, you know, he's obviously, and with good reason, already established this rep as being sort of the biggest pest in the league, and affectionately been garnered with the nickname Matthew Mayhem Tkachuk. And it's just because when he's out there, it seems like either him or someone else is taking a penalty. And, you know, if he could tone that down and keep himself out of the penalty box a little bit while also not losing that edge, which I understand it's easier said than done because that's kind of part of his game, he'd be even more valuable. But his playmaking is not something that typically gets talked enough about just because that other stuff gets most of the attention. But he's so good, and him and Michael Backlund work perfectly off of each other, and I think the world of him as a player. So he was on my honorable mentions. You know, a guy like Michael Granlund, I'm really high on, but he unfortunately just also didn't make the cut. So there's so many guys on this list, I feel like we could do a full honorable mentions podcast before we actually even get to the top 20, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, we really could. And I feel like that's one of the things that when you really get into, you know, the data-driven analysis and stuff, you gain more appreciation for more different play styles. And there's more players that really stick out to you, and you try to figure out why they're special and what drives them. It's super interesting. And I think with Tkachuk, one of the other things that's really underrated about him is he's a great playmaker, but he's also a deadly shooter on the power play. Like, he's just excellent at picking up little plays and getting quick shots off in tight areas. He can roof it on you real quick. I'm really impressed with the way he's evolved as a player, and not just his ability to draw calls. I think he led all wingers last year in drawn calls, but just his scoring ability. I think because he's a pest, that scoring ability makes him more effective. It's a lot like the Brad Marchand thing, right? So like, if Brad Marchand was, you know, Patrick Kaleta's level talent, we would know his name, but he would be an afterthought. You know, people wouldn't really care about him.
Right.
But it's that fact that not only is he diving to draw a call on you after he slew-footed you, he's going to score on the power play. And that just makes you more and more angry. And then you're going to react again and get in trouble. And, you know, Tkachuk's had another great start to the year. So, like, he's not, you know, doing anything but getting better. He's an incredible player. Yeah. Yeah, really fun to watch, even though, you know, I wouldn't say I love the dirty hockey, but at the same time, I find his particular brand, like, oddly funny, because he just seems to, like, his complete lack of respect for star players, like, he always goes after the stars, is just super interesting to me. Like, his battles with Doughty are already legendary, and it's his third year in the NHL.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, I'm sure there's going to be examples and people are going to be like, oh, no, you're actually wrong. But I feel like generally of all those guys that do play that type of way, like, his, for whatever reason, just doesn't kind of strike me as malicious. Or I don't know. I feel like he kind of does a solid job of towing that line where it just feels like it is kind of, it's part of the gamesmanship, and he has the skill to back it up so he can get away with it. And yeah, good on him. Another name I did want to throw in here, because I had him initially in my top 20 and I bumped him down a little bit, but Jonathan Marchessault. Obviously, I'm sure with your list, just the fact that, you know, he had that one really good season in Florida, and on a permanent basis, he was very solid in a limited role with Tampa Bay even the year before. But I know that when we were talking about your methodology, you do sort of a 3-year overview, right? So even though you're weighing them more towards recency, the fact that he's had only one kind of monster offensive season so far probably bumped him down your overall rankings.
Yeah, actually, his season in Florida wasn't too much worse by the rankings than the one in Vegas. I thought, like, he's had two really top end seasons. It's the season in Tampa Bay, he was, like, you know, a middle six winger who had some good scoring ability. He's had some big jumps in his transition game the last couple of years. He's still not, you know, great at it. He's not a great puck carrier. He can be a little bit turnover happy in the neutral zone. But every stat that you look at, or every combined stat that I've created, there's like a linear progression over the last 3 years. He's gotten slightly better offensively each year. There was a big jump going to Florida, and then a slighter jump last year that just produced more points with better line mates. And then last year as well, he bumped up his transition game, and his defensive game has gotten a lot better. So he's a player who's on the rise for me. I just couldn't put him over some of the more established or higher end talents.
Yep. No, I think that's fair. Okay, let's take a quick break here actually to hear from a sponsor, and then we're going to get finally, mercifully, into our top 20 on the other end of things.
Getting tickets online can be far too complicated. With hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability, it's hard to know who to trust out there. That's why SeatGeek's the way to go, because they're going to pull millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats you want for a price you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek's going to get you close to the action for a great value. SeatGeek's designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever before, and every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with full confidence, knowing that what you're paying for is what you're actually going to get. Make SeatGeek your go-to ticket source for everything from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Now that we're still in October, this is the prime time to be getting out there to all sorts of sporting events, whether it's NBA season starting, hockey being in full flight, MLB postseason, NFL's going on. I mean, there's just so much to choose from. So this is a great time to get in on an action if you haven't already. I actually have SeatGeek on my phone, and I just used it the other day to land some tickets to go watch the Bruins when they visit Vancouver to play the Canucks next weekend. Now, when I bought the tickets, I thought Elias Pettersson was going to play, and I was looking forward to seeing him up close and personal and getting a better feel for the magic he's creating out there. And unfortunately, since then, you know, Michael Matheson decided to be a big baby and choke slam him through the ice. And unfortunately, Elias Pettersson's going to be out and probably miss that game. So hopefully for both his and the Canucks long-term perspective, he has a full and speedy recovery. But in the meantime, I'm going to try to find some other ways to entertain myself there. I'm looking forward to seeing that Bruins first line in action with Pastrnak, Marchand, and Bergeron. It's as good as it gets, so it's not all bad. But you yourself can choose any event you want to go to using SeatGeek and go there yourself. And as my listener, you're going to get $20 off your first purchase with SeatGeek. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code PDO today. That's promo code PDO for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Now let's get back to the show.
Okay, let's do this. Give me your number 20, and I guess, you know, we can just go from there. Because I don't definitively have anyone in my top 20 slot right now. I want to hear your argument.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. So my number 20 is Brendan Gallagher. Mm-hmm. And the reason why he beat out Raquel for this spot is Raquel ranked really, really high. I actually, like, the way I do the rankings, right, is everything's by position. Mm-hmm. And so left and right wing is actually separated. I don't know if I'm going to do that next year, if I'm going to combine them, because it doesn't make a lot of sense necessarily to split them up. But when you're compared against your peers, you know, your rankings can change whether or not you're on the left or the right. Mm-hmm. And because Raquel can play both sides, I actually ranked him on both sides. So he ranked really high among left wings, but among right wings, he was actually below Gallagher. So I had Gallagher slightly higher than him. Just a relentless, unbelievable forechecker, amazing high danger scoring chance producer, amazing possession driver. Gallagher's defensive game has grown a lot, and now that Claude Julien has asked him to, like, diversify his game a little bit, you'll notice that he carries the puck a lot more in the neutral zone, creates a lot more entries. You know, his transition game has taken a huge step. He's better defensively, and also he's kind of strafed back a little bit. He's not necessarily always at the net front. He is at times because he's really good at it, but he likes to sit in that, like, sniper's position in the high slot. And we saw that last year translate into his first 30 goal season. And already this year, like, you look at him and he looks like the same player as last year. So I think Brendan Gallagher could even move up this list. He kind of reminds me of what Claude Julien did with Brad Marchand. Not to continually bring up Brad Marchand, but he's a fantastic player who was coached by the same guy, where Marchand always had the talent, Gallagher always had the talent, but, you know, it took a little while for them to really ascend to their peak. Marchand, you know, obviously has hit his peak much later in his career than most players and doesn't seem to be fading anytime soon. And I could see that same trajectory for Brendan Gallagher.
It's something I want to circle back to. So you were saying how for Raquel, his number, how he stacked up against his peers on one wing was significantly better than the other. Is that purely because of a discrepancy in quality on the two wings in terms of the peers themselves? Or was that a reference to Raquel's actual individual play, depending on where he's playing?
Well, I mean, the weighting isn't any different for one wing or the other in terms of, like, what stats are being used. Mm-hmm. I think the problem was that the right wingers are good at the same things Raquel is. So the things that he stands out in, he didn't get as high a scores as on the left. I'm not, like, looking at the data right now, but let's just say, for example, that left wingers are much better at transitioning the puck than right wingers, just by some random happenstance, or maybe that's the way that the NHL works, is they move the puck up the left wall more often and right wingers create more offense. Well, if Raquel is really good offensively but not really good at transitioning the puck, then putting him on the left wing, he might have a slightly higher transition score, but his offense takes a hit. So it's kind of a random thing, but I felt like if he was below a bunch of players on the right wing who are similar in terms of impact, that kind of knocked him slightly down for me. But I still think he's a phenomenal player who, you know, especially with all the injuries in Anaheim last year, was almost as responsible as John Gibson for them making the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. And he's also one of those guys who has kind of weirdly, you know, I typically push back against the idea that prospects and young players get better in a linear stepwise fashion moving forward, like every year,
which he does,
which people expect, like, but he is one of those guys that every year you can sort of noticeably see that both in his production and his actual just play on the ice, that every year he gets a little bit better, which is unique and awesome kind of to see from him.
Yeah, it's basically like he improves by around 10 points every year.
Yeah,
it's really funny. Yeah, I like it.
I like it too. Did you have Mikko Rantanen in your top 20? I just wanted to know if we should talk about him right now as kind of more of an honorable mention, or if he is on your list.
I did not have him in there. His defensive game held him off.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I guess, the fact that he does get to play with Nathan MacKinnon, who we're super high on, and, yes, and Gabriel Landeskog, it's a pretty cushy spot for him. I do like him quite a bit. And I guess maybe in this latter half of my top 20, with guys like Radulov and Voracek making the list, I do favor the playmakers a little bit more. But I do really wanted to give him a little credit, because people, I feel like, generally kind of knock him down a peg or two just because he does get to play with those great players, and they think he's kind of riding shotgun and just being a pedestrian. But if you kind of look at it a bit closer and just watch how he's playing out there, his playmaking ability is very, very legit, and I like him quite a bit as a player as well.
Yeah, I feel like in today's NHL, there aren't very many guys who can, you know, put up 84 points and be complete passengers, right? Like, you've got to have some base level of high-end talent to be able to do that, even with a guy like Nathan MacKinnon. I mean, you saw, like, I think Nico Hischier is a fantastic player, and I know he was just a kid last year, but he wasn't able to do that with Taylor Hall, and Hall had a somewhat similar season to Nathan MacKinnon in terms of point production. So, like, it's difficult to put up those kinds of numbers, and that's why, as much as, you know, Rantanen shot 16% last year, which is actually not that far from his career average so far, but, you know, Bill Carlson, right? He shot an insane level last year, but the fact that he was able to do that at all obviously adjusts our view of him to the point where we don't expect him to regress down to his previous shooting percentage. We expect maybe, like, you know, 2/3 to a half of what he was able to do last year. And now we think of him as, oh, this guy's an offensive player. He can chip in, you know, maybe he won't score 80 points, but he'll score 50 this year, you know, or maybe he'll hit 60, no longer expecting him to be at the 20 level or something like that. So I think you definitely can't be a pure passenger in the NHL anymore, unless you're maybe on, like, McDavid's line, or, you know, Crosby in his prime, that kind of thing. Those kinds of players can turn passengers into top end guys, but not to disrespect MacKinnon, I think he's just, like, one slight notch below those guys.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Okay. Let's keep going with your list then. Who do you have after Gallagher?
I have, falling down the list quite a bit, actually, is Max Pacioretty.
Mm.
Yeah. His two-way play is still fantastic, but, you know, there's no two ways about it. He had a bad year last year, and, you know, we could chalk it up to the trade rumors and how he was dealing with that mentally. But at the same time, you can't, like, there's always excuses whenever guys have a bad year. Whether or not they're legit doesn't really matter when you're evaluating talent. So maybe Pacioretty can bump himself back up with a great year this year, but he's down there at 19 for me.
Yeah, no, he just missed the cut for my list. Obviously, his resume speaks for itself, and I'm pretty high on him moving forward this season. I feel like he definitely is in a better spot for a variety of reasons, and he should get back to that 30-plus goal range that he had been living in for a long time. The start to the year for Vegas has been up and down, to say the least. You know, it would have pointed to Marc-Andre Fleury and his obvious inevitable regression back to where he was at for the majority of his career compared to last season as the big reason why. But their most recent game against Philly, he was just otherworldly and basically stole that for them with a shutout. So who knows, maybe he can find a nice little happy medium there and they'll eventually get it together. You and I haven't necessarily talked about it, but how do you feel about them moving forward this season? Because it seems like opinions on them wildly vary, and I find myself kind of somewhere in the middle where I think that they're going to be competing, if not making a playoff spot in the Pacific. They obviously won't be as great as they were last year, but I also think that there's enough talent there, especially when Naismith comes back, that I don't expect them to just completely fall off the map either.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I'm more in the middle. I think that they're a team that should be in that maybe wild card or slightly above area. Like, they could miss the playoffs, but it wouldn't be because of bad play. I think they've played really well to start the season. They just haven't got any of the breaks that they got last year, right? It's kind of like the complete opposite situation, which I think as this is happening, there's a lot of people who were skeptics last year, like pointing their finger and going, see, I told you. But, you know, over a full season, I think they're going to be fine. Maybe they'll have some really bad luck and it'll last and it'll be like a full on like actual regression from last season. But I think that they've made some good moves in the offseason. I like the Stastny signing. I like the Pacioretty move. They paid some hefty prices to bring in those players, but it works. I think that if Marc-Andre Fleury, like you said, can find some balance in his game, even if he's not great, they're definitely going to be okay. He just can't be bad. And right. He was the first few games, obviously, and kind of put it together against Philly.
Yep. No, I agree. Okay, let's keep going with the list then.
All right. So at 18, I have currently not playing Willie Nylander.
Mm. I had him at 20 on mine, so let's get into Willie.
Yeah, he's, I guess that's, you know, pretty same range. Mm-hmm. Willie is a really good player, one of the better offensive drivers in the league already. I actually had him above Mitch Marner both of the last seasons in terms of overall impact, but Marner being younger and obviously recency bias has Marner slightly ahead for me now.
Mitch Marner has been way better this season.
Yes,
than Willie Nylander, especially.
yeah, he's got way more points than Willie Nylander this season.
Yeah.
But I think Nylander, because of the fact that he's not playing and the Leafs are scoring at will, is kind of being underrated right now. Mm-hmm. He has some definite trouble in the defensive zone. He can be a bit of a passenger there, but his neutral zone defense is actually fantastic. He's great at picking up pucks off players' sticks when they're not expecting it. He's great at, you know, little poke checks that push the puck the other way. Great at recovering loose pucks there. And his transition game is otherworldly. He's one of the best puck carriers in the league. He's just such a smooth skater and so dynamic with the puck. You know, Matthews right now is actually being outscored at even strength, which is crazy. And, you know, nobody really cares because he scored 10 goals and the power play is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But when Nylander comes back, I expect that to stop pronto because he's just an otherworldly playmaker who will, you know, keep the puck in the offensive zone a lot more often.
Well, that's the thing. And obviously Matthews is a great player and he's going to get his production regardless of who he plays with. But it was kind of funny seeing at the start of the season when the Leafs were trying to make Tyler Ennis work in that spot. And he's found a bit more success with Kasperi Kapanen just because his speed is helped quite a bit with puck retrievals and doing a little bit of the dirty work. But it's very clear still watching that they miss Nylander's sort of just high-end ability, both with playmaking, but also just with how he can get the Leafs in better positions to score to take advantage of Matthews' lethal shot. So even though the Leafs have been scoring and Matthews is going to score a million goals this season, you're right. I think it's very important not to lose sight of the fact of what Nylander contributes to that line and Matthews' success at 5-on-5.
Yeah, he's a good player, and literally right above him, the next spot, I have Mitch Marner, which I think you could argue moving him up a little bit earlier if you really like the small sample sizes, and you look at his play in the playoffs last year, where I thought he was actually Toronto's best player in the playoffs by a fairly significant margin, and part of that's because I think Matthews was still not 100% from his injury at the end of the year, but he's just taken a huge progression in the last half season, a little bit less maybe. He's gone from being really poor defensively to all of a sudden becoming a very aggressive defensive player who really tries hard and is successful in the defensive zone. He can still, you know, make some pretty bad turnovers because he's trying cool things all the time, which I think if you're the Maple Leafs, you're probably okay with. And that chemistry with Tavares, man alive. That line right now is unbelievable.
Yep. Yeah, no, yeah, I agree with all those points with how he stood out in the postseason, how he seems to have taken his game to another level this year. He's kind of vaulted himself into the conversation of the league's best playmakers. It seems like whenever he's out there on the ice, the puck seems to find him, and he's just so dynamic and dangerous with it. I feel like, I don't know, with it, it's a testament to that ability and sort of how he's grown as a player that I feel like the Leafs are the most dangerous on the power play when the puck is flowing through him and he's distributing and making the plays, and considering the other guys that are out there, that's very high praise for him and what he's able to do as a passer, and a guy who just kind of sees the ice and sees the progressions at a high level.
Yeah, absolutely. And he makes like passes on the power play, and you know, he's always been great on the power play. His even strength work was, you know, decent, but not in the same realm as Nylander the last two seasons. And that's kind of like rocketed up now that he's with Tavares. But on the power play, he makes passes that, you know, if you're watching at full speed, may not seem, you know, the most impressive. And then when you go back and look at it, you're like, how did he even see that guy there? And how did he get through those sticks? And he just picks spots that normal guys aren't able to do. Mm. And yeah, what I'm saying is Mitch Marner is a mutant.
And I do love the fact that it really flies kind of counterintuitive or in the face of conventional thinking, where it's like, you know, a smaller guy like that, especially a skilled player, can't be good defensively. And then you watch, especially in the neutral zone, where he uses his speed to be very disruptive, and his stick is so incredible at kind of Mark Stone style, just kind of lifting the puck off of other guys and pickpocketing them. And I think we've seen him get better and better every year, and I feel like the sky's the limit for him, and I'm sure that people will kind of keep that in proportion and not completely lose their minds if he keeps playing this well.
Yeah, I'm sure that nobody will say that he's, you know, better than Matthews or anything like that.
No, I did have him 15 on my list here, so I'm obviously very high on him. I had Nylander at 20. Let's get to the 15 range for you. So who do you have as the next couple guys?
The next guy that I have is our good buddy Sebastian Aho, the winger version, not the defenseman.
So I didn't have him on my list because I view him as a center.
Yeah, he's playing center now, but he hasn't really played center at all.
You're right.
Before this year, yeah. Right? So I figured it would be most fair to include him as a winger because I just don't know who he is as a center.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I guess I just view him as a center because he has played that this year, and I think moving forward, I imagine Carolina envisions him as being their top center. But you're right, based on the track record the past three seasons. So let's get into him. Let's get into Carolina then, because I'm fresh off. We're recording this Monday morning. I think it's going to post on Tuesday, but we're fresh off of that crazy Carolina Winnipeg game on Sunday evening, where there were only a couple goals scored. I think the final score was 3-1 with empty netter, but it really could have been like 8-7 if the goaltending wasn't out of their, if Petr Mrazek and Laurent Brossoit of all people weren't out of their minds and there weren't a couple posts hit. Just the frantic speed that both teams were playing with in a controlled sense, and the dynamic players out there, and sort of how they were pushing the pace and pushing the limitations of what we think guys can do out there was incredible to watch. And Aho himself has really taken his game to another level this year, and Carolina's probably been the best story in the league so far. They finally took their first regulation loss. There's no shame in that, in a back-to-back on the road against Winnipeg, but they under Rod Brind'Amour, they're playing sort of reminiscent of what Vegas was playing like last year, I feel like, in terms of just a very aggressive forecheck, really playing as fast as possible out there and being super aggressive. And we'll see if the goaltending can hold up to make them an actual playoff team this season. But so far, just offensively, they've been it's been a bit of a tour de force showing from the whole team, with Aho leading the charge.
Yeah, Aho is, would you say that he's Carolina's best forward now? I feel like that's pretty.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the other option would be Jordan Staal, just because of what he does from a two-way perspective.
Right. I think Jordan Staal, as great as he is maybe like slightly overrated by the analytically inclined people. I think you've got to be a little bit more offensive minded to, you know, be in that like, you know, top 10 center area. Well, than Staal is.
And I think there's a combination, right? You're right. There's like a sort of temperament or sort of a willingness to play a certain way. And then there's the actual offensive high-end talent, and it's pretty clear to me that, I mean, the case for Aho is very obvious at this point, where it's just he can move the needle offensively for them in a way that very few around the league can. So it's pretty clear that I think he's their most impactful player up front, at least.
Yeah, and you know, were you skeptical of Rod Brind'Amour at all? Because I know, like, when I saw what Carolina did in the offseason, you know, obviously the Dougie Hamilton trade looked great. Mm-hmm. I like Michael Ferland. I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but it might have been me talking to somebody else, but whenever a team is bad and they're looking at like, you know, oh, we need more grit, we need to be harder to play against, we need some bigger guys, if your answer to that is to acquire a guy like Michael Ferlin, I'm all right with that because he can play.
Yeah.
You know, like if that's who you're going for and not like, you know, the Mike Browns of the world, I feel like that's some smart decision making. But I thought the Skinner trade was, you know, pretty bad. I was very unsure about Rod Brind'Amour and, you know, like the practices titled like Grit and Grind or whatever. And you were wondering what was going to happen. And then, you know, you look and Carolina so far is at almost 62% Corsi. You know, they had their first regulation loss of the year in game six against a team that is a legitimate Stanley Cup threat. And you said a back to back, like that's really impressive work. And, you know, with still question marks and goal, you know, as good as it's been earlier this year, it, like, this is a good team and maybe they're finally taking the next step. And I will reserve my right to take it back, but I bow to Rod Brind'Amour and say I was wrong to be skeptical.
Yeah, I think there was a certain stink to their summer, right? Because for the past couple of years, we've all been so high on Carolina and dubbing them a preseason sleeper. And even last year, they got off to a nice little start. And then for a variety of reasons, mostly their ability to keep the puck out of their own net, wound up hampering them and costing them a chance at the playoffs. And then the whole discourse this towards the end of last season and then heading into the summer with the new ownership and sort of the quotes about grit and grind, like you said, and trying to change their culture or however you want to put it. And I did like their moves. Obviously, the Skinner trade was questionable, and you know, it was really tough to know what this team would look like and sort of how much merit there was to what they were actually saying or whether it was just kind of a PR thing. But they've been a great story so far. The, you know, the celebrations after they win and just kind of how they seem to be having fun out there. It's a blast. And you're right about Ferland. I think that's a really good point to make. There's kind of a difference between sort of grit and toughness and functional grit and toughness. And we got into this with when the Kings were really good. And I feel like Winnipeg is a good example now. I think I saw some of it last postseason where people would point to the success of Winnipeg and go, see, you do need to be big in today's NHL still to be successful. And like, I don't think anyone is saying that you should just be drafting and playing a bunch of guys who are 5'10". Like that's not what we're saying. The whole point is that sometimes people forego skill just for size. Obviously, if you can find a happy marriage between those two and get a bunch of guys like Blake Wheeler and Dustin Byfuglien, who are massive human beings, but also very good at other stuff, that would be an ideal scenario. But it feels like teams generally overreact and overpay for size. So that's why undersized guys who have skill have been a bit of a market inefficiency in the past. I'm not sure if that's still the case in the NHL with how things have shifted, but if you can find that happy medium there with a guy like Michael Ferland, I'm all for it. So I think sometimes that's a bit of a misconception with the whole analytics versus old school type mentality debate.
Yeah, and I feel like the whole like Michael Ferland style player, that like that's what I see as, you know, like there's different kinds of hard to play against, and I usually hate it when NHL people or hockey people say like, oh, such and such is hard to play against. And they're usually talking about like really gritty guys like Roman Polak, hard to play against because, you know, you're going to get hit. But like, is he actually difficult to score against?
Right.
That's like the main thing that I look at, like hard to play against and hard to score against are two different things. Now, if you could have both, that's amazing. But, you know, how rare is a Dustin Byfuglien, you know, like that's the big thing. Like if you can find one of those players, pay them whatever, you know, they're fantastic.
Yep.
But like you said, it's all about like finding efficiencies and making the best team possible. So if you're looking for Dustin Byfuglien and getting Dylan McIlrath, you know, you're probably not making the best choices.
Jared Tenorti.
Yes, exactly. You know, like I remember when Jared Tenorti was drafted, Bruce Peters, who's now working for the Marlies and is a Calder Cup champion now, by the way, he wrote a piece on EOTP where every word in a paragraph, or it might have just been a sentence, but it was like a 15-word sentence, was a link to a different player or a different defenseman who was drafted who was like over 6'6 and turned out to be nothing. And it was just from like the last 5 years. And they're all like first-round guys. And it's just like that search for size, ignoring, you know, what you actually do on the ice, or not taking into account enough of it, I guess, that is just a bad idea. And But functional grit, man, yeah. I'm all for it. Yeah. Give me the Michael Furlans of the world or, you know, the Kyle Connors who hang out at the net front and take abuse. Those guys are good.
Mm-hmm. Bruce Peters, listener of the PDOcast. Sup, Bruce? Yeah, I feel like we started talking about Aho and then 7 minutes right. later, 7 minutes of Michael Furlan later, we're starting to talk to him. And so, you know, acknowledging that, it kind of runs in opposition with what I'm about to say, but I do feel like we, at some point, we're going to reach kind of that weird, annoying middle ground of people saying Sebastian Aho is the best player no one talks about, even though everyone is talking about him. Like, I feel like, generally speaking, maybe it still hasn't, perception hasn't reached reality, just because Carolina, in the grand scheme of things, still, despite their hot start and fun personalities, obviously isn't getting the same type of coverage and attention as a team like the Leafs, for example. But I feel like if you're a hockey fan at this point, you're probably at least becoming aware of Sebastian Aho and what he's doing with these highlight reels and high point totals he's reaching. So it might still be a year or two away, but we are going to reach that point where people still keep talking about him as the most underrated player in the league, even though everyone acknowledges that he's just a great player.
He's the next Louis Erickson, yes. Is what you're saying?
Yes, yeah.
Where he's still underrated to the point where he's like already in decline. People are like, have you heard of this guy, Sebastian Aho?
Yeah.
I definitely am guilty of that, saying that he's like the best player that not enough people talk about.
Right.
I think it's mostly due to him being in Carolina and the fact that they've been expected to be great for a few years and just end up middling, so he kind of gets lost. But yeah, I think most people, especially the people that we talk to every day, know very well who Sebastian Aho is. And, you know, he's just so friggin' talented. Mm-hmm. He can come at you every single way. He's a versatile attacker. He can make plays with the best of them. He can score. He's probably going to hit 30 goals this year for the first time, which, you know, he almost hit it last year. He's just an incredible player. His play without the puck is actually quite strong as well. He is not the top transition player at his position or anything, but he's decent enough. And yeah, defensively, I mean, I think coming up through that Carolina system probably also helps, because you've got, you know, a very structured play that they have, either with Bill Peters or now with Rod Brind'Amour. So you kind of learn that structure and become a key cog right away if you've got the talent and the will to commit to it. So he's just a all-around good player. I don't see many stark weaknesses with Aho, and I think that's, you know, it sounds like a boring compliment, but it's a big compliment.
No, I agree with that. That's well said. Okay, let's move up the list. Who do you have after Aho?
After Aho, I have Patrick Laine.
Mm.
Which he's further down the list than a lot of people would have, but he's going to move up the list. He'll get up there. I think the thing about Laine is right now, you have to remember that his first 2 years in the NHL, he was a teenager. He was a fairly young teenager as well. And he scored more goals as a teenager than anybody in NHL history except for two guys, Jimmy Carson and Dale Hawerchuk, who both played in the 80s.
Yes.
When goaltenders were stopping about 85% of shots.
Right.
He was shooting on, you know, 9-1-3 goalies and has a mind-bendingly high shooting percentage that seems to be completely sustainable somehow. He probably has the best shot in NHL history at this point. He's shooting at nearly double league average, which is just nuts for a guy who actually shoots with a bit of volume as well. So if he's able to maintain that and increase his shot volume, which is something that happens for most players moving out of their teenage years who are shooters first, you know, the heights that he can hit are incredible. You know, we're really focused on Austin Matthews right now and his ability to be, you know, maybe push 60 goals this year. I think Laine can do that too. I think eventually Laine will probably score more goals than Austin Matthews in his career. Matthews is a better all-around player. Mm-hmm. But I think the main thing for Laine that I'm looking for is a bit more all-around play. And I've actually seen it this year. Now, his line has been really, really strong, and he's actually committed a little bit more to his play without the puck. So I think he's got the wheels and the skills to become a much better two-way player. He just isn't quite there yet.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I have him 17 on my list. But yeah, he's right there. Obviously, he's a name that's going to keep moving up this, and I wouldn't be surprised whether it was a year or two from now if he's firmly in the top 10. I
the defensive and two-way play is definitely fair. It's when he's in the offensive zone and what he's capable of, and sort of the reputation he's already getting, but just that shot is like is such a weapon. And he's had a bit of a slow start to the season offensively. I know he scored he scored the first goal of the season for Winnipeg, and then he scored a second one on the power play last night against Carolina. But we saw last year where he had a bit of a funk, and then he started growing out the beard, and then all of a sudden he was like literally scoring a goal every single game they played for like multiple weeks. So he's going to get his in that race for the Rocket Richard, even though Matthews has a bit of a head start with him, and Ovechkin obviously is going to be quite a spectacular battle as the season gets going. I know we talked about that a bit on the last podcast when we were talking about centers and Matthews, but I'm really looking forward to that as a key storyline as the season progresses. And man, yeah, Line A just what a player. And I feel like with pure snipers such as himself, sometimes it can get a bit overlooked, but I have also seen a bit more playmaking from him this season. And I feel like when you're that good of a shooter, kind of like Stamkos, obviously they're going to have a bit of a gravitational pull and everyone's going to move towards you and have their eyes keyed on you when you have the puck, especially in the power play. So if you are able to expand your game a little bit and hit guys with passes, cross seam especially, all of a sudden you're pretty much indefensible. And I feel like at some point we're going to reach that peak with Line A as an offensive player.
Yeah, it's coming. And you can see it. Like you said, his playmaking has taken a step. Mm-hmm. He's fun to watch, and also one of the best quotes in the league, if not the best. Oh, like, yeah, his chirps at the Canucks earlier this season, fantastic. Like, and the goat beard, I hope he grows it back because mm-hmm. it's so ugly and awful. No. I just love it. I love having a guy with that much talent also showing his personality. You know, it does remind me a little bit of Ovechkin when he first broke into the league, and you remember when like he hit his hole in one, and
yeah,
there was always a video camera on Ovechkin in his first couple years in the league, and he's still just as boisterous. So I hope Line A is the same way and just never loses that quality.
Yeah, no, the beard was good. I don't know, this is a hot take, but I want him to bring back that like evil villain mustache that he had for a while there. I think it was like two years ago at the awards, and he had it a bit during the regular season, but so just like blonde wispy mustache. It's great. It's great. With like the slick back hair. It's such a good villain look. Yeah, no, Line A is awesome, and it's nice to see that. You're right, in the pre-draft process, he was showing that personality, and I was like, I just hope the NHL doesn't suck the fun out of him. And in the first couple seasons, so far, so good. So let's hope that continues. Okay, so let's go through my list a little bit here. So I had Nylander at 20, and then I had Line A at 17, as I mentioned. So bridging those two guys at 18, 19, I had Alex Radulov and Jake Voracek. We've talked a bit about Radulov. Yeah, I know you mentioned him as being one of your honorable mentions. Jake Voracek, man, I understand the reservations maybe about having him high on this list, just because so much of his production, especially last year, came on the power play, and he gets to likewise play with great players. But I just can't shake this feeling whenever I watch the Flyers. And listen, I'm huge on Sean Couturier, and I have Claude Giroux higher than him on this list, but I feel like every time I watch the Flyers, what I come away with is Jake Voracek is, just by the eye test, Philadelphia's best player. Like, some of the stuff he's capable of with protecting the puck and finding that perfect balance of size and skill is really kind of just draws your eyes to him. And I feel like, and he's obviously, the numbers themselves match this up, but he's a heck of a playmaker, and that's why I had him at 19 on my list.
Yeah, I had him in around like the 25 range. Mm-hmm. I really like Voracek. I think I'm slightly biased about him just because, you know, when I did these breakdowns the first time 3 years ago, he was actually, I think he was either the top or like the second best transition player, period, among forwards. Like, he was phenomenal, and he's kind of taken a step down there each of the last three seasons. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, is he, you know, playing a different role? Is he starting to decline a little bit early? Is he just, you know, was the sample that I had just, you know, his peak, and now he's, you know, not necessarily in decline, but kind of leveling off, plateauing? He had a big bounce back year last year, just like Giroux did, not just in terms of offensive production, but the underlyings overall. Big defensive year as well. I think he's a really good player. I just would put him as the third best player on that line, I think, yeah. Which is crazy, but mm-hmm. also that line is incredible. And it's pretty stiff competition between Couturier and Giroux.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, I have Claude Giroux at 11 on this list, and I had Sean Couturier as my 20th best center, I believe. So I'm obviously very high on that line. So yeah, when you say he's the third best player on that line, that can be true while also just not being like a diss to Voracek and what he's capable of, right? Just because the other two guys are so great. I have, because I had Mitch Marner at 15. So just to round this out, at 16, I had Jaden Schwartz.
Yeah, he's good. He's really good.
Very
good. I had him off my list, but...
I feel like part of it is he has missed quite a bit of time,
mm-hmm.
which obviously is a fair knock. Like, it's tough to know how much of that is he's injury prone and how much of it is bad luck. Like, he could very easily string together 82 games this season, and all of a sudden that perspective or line of thinking would change. But yeah, he's just one of those guys, especially playing with Vlad Tarasenko, who we'll get to in a bit. Those two fit so well together, but obviously just because Tarasenko's a bit flashier and scores most of the goals, I feel like Schwartz winds up living in the shadows a little bit. But just what he's capable of, like when they don't have the puck and getting it, securing it, and getting it to Tarasenko is a thing to marvel at whenever he's on the ice.
Yeah, I think he's an underrated, not just playmaker, but you know, passer all around the ice. He's a really versatile player. I really like Jaden Schwartz. I think what holds him back slightly for me is I think he's just like that one tier below the very top wingers, mm-hmm. right? And I think that there's potential that he could take an extra step, but I think he needs Tarasenko to be great for him to take that step, right? And right. I feel like as great as that line was overall last year, you know, like when you go back and look at it, Tarasenko actually didn't score as much as you would think that he did. Like, I actually hope they're a little bit better this year. And I'm actually surprised that St. Louis broke that lineup right away, which I guess, you know, when Ryan O'Reilly steps into your lineup, you can move things around however you want. But they were so good together that it was a bit surprising to me that, you know, it's not Shen, Schwartz, and Tarasenko again this year.
Yeah. Yeah. But they have... they're amongst like the most loaded teams up front in terms of the yes. chess pieces they have. So I'm sure that as the year gets going, especially since there's so many new faces in there with both young players and free agents they signed, like I'm sure Mike Yeo will figure out that best combination at some point in the year. So let's continue on with your list there, because we're inside my top 15 now. So who's next up on yours?
At 14, I have.
Oh, so we're inside your friend. We've done your 15 to 20.
Yep. It was Gallagher, Pacioretty, Nylander, Marner, Aho.
Okay.
And Laine.
Okay, that's great. Let's take one more quick break here, and then we're going to do your top 15 on the other end. I just wanted to take a quick little break here in the show to remind you guys that this season we are hosting daily fantasy contests over at FanDuel each and every Thursday this season. We picked Thursday because that seems to be the busiest weekday in the schedule, and the more games are, the more players that are available, and the more diversity with the lineups, and it just creates more variability and more fun with the contests. The turnout so far in the first 2 weeks has been really good, and I'm hoping we keep that going, and we'll see where it goes. So just a quick little refresher for those of you that are new to Daily Fantasy, all you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/PDO and let them know that we sent you. And when you make your first deposit, FanDuel is actually going to give you a $20 bonus to give you some extra little spending cash to play with. And I guarantee once you get going with FanDuel and you start playing some of these daily fantasy contests, you're going to be using that because it's pretty addictive. So let's say it's a Thursday. You sign up, you join the contest by clicking the link I'm going to send out and tweet out there, and you take up one of the 20 slots that are available, and then you pick your lineup based on the players that are available and playing on that given night, and then you go up against myself and the rest of the competition, and the best team wins. I think the first three top prizes wind up winning some cash. So other than that, there's plenty of bragging rights available as well. I typically suck at these daily fantasy contests, so you'll probably finish ahead of me. So even if you don't wind up finishing the top three and winning money, you'll have at least that going for you. There are only 20 slots available. It's the maximum that FanDuel allows me to create for these contests, so it is going on a first come first serve basis, and the slots do typically go pretty quickly. So I'll either tweet out the link on Wednesday night or Thursday morning once I open the contest, and
as soon as you see it out there, just make sure you sign up and take up one of the slots so that you don't miss out on the fun. If you really want to make sure that you get in on it and you think, you know, you might not be waiting on Twitter on Thursday morning for me to tweet out that link and you don't want to miss it, just feel free to message me and I will make sure to pass along the link to you so that you can reserve one of the slots and not miss out on it. I'm looking forward to seeing you all there. So just, yeah, that's vandal.com/PDO and just make sure you let them know that I sent you and we're going to have some fun each and every Thursday. So I'm looking forward to it. With that out of the way, let's get back to finishing up this list with Andrew Berkshire and ranking the top wingers in the NHL.
All right, let's do this. So who's your 14?
My 14 is our good friend, Filipovich Forsberg.
Yeah, he's also my 14. I feel we both had Eichel at 10 on our list last time. So we always have like the one guy who we completely agree upon. So let's get into Filipovich. Yeah,
awesome. He's Nashville's best forward by far. Versatile playmaker and scoring chance producer. He scores goals that, you know, his point production is only in like the 60-ish range, like the 60s, but he scores goals that you expect from guys that are in like the 90-point range. You know, like he has this tantalizing talent that makes you think that he could all of a sudden one year push like 100 points, right? Like that's how good he is, but he just hasn't got there. And, you know, he's a good transition player, great defensive player. He's all around excellent. I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Forsberg has like a not MVP quality, but in that like the same thing that Hall did last year, but maybe not quite as good.
Well, Andrew, thank you for all those kind words about me.
Yeah, I know.
I generally don't know how to take a compliment, but you just showered me with so much affection there that I'm overwhelmed. No, he is awesome. He's right up there with Matthews as like the two guys with the most sort of elusive shots, or just how quickly they can release it and the torque they can get on it while also doing it from weird, unpredictable angles and tricky timing for goalies to position themselves is a thing of beauty. He scored a goal the other day. He was on kind of like a 2-on-1 with Ryan Johansson. I think it was against the Islanders on Saturday. And the time it took from Johansson flinging the pass over to him to it being behind the goalie and in the net was just like, it was insane. It literally, like, the replay like could barely capture how it just spent no time on his stick and he was able to get so much on it with such precision. And it's funny because I feel like when, you know, he obviously made a name for himself as a prospect, I believe he was Sweden's team captain for World Juniors, and when Washington drafted him, everyone liked him as a prospect, but he felt like one of those guys, like he felt like he was going to be just like an awesome kind of two-way player with more of that prototypical Swedish like defensive responsibility and just being very solid. I didn't see this offensive upside coming from him, but he's just been so insane over the past couple seasons. And you're right, I'm not sure what his ultimate ceiling is for pure volume of points, just because Nashville has enough depth to go around to not necessarily just need to rely on one line to eat up a crazy amount of minutes like a team like Florida does, for example, with Sasha Barkov. So I'm not sure how much he's going to play and how much he's going to be able to produce points wise, but he's as lethal as it gets as a goal scorer and does a bunch of other stuff too. And that's why we both had him at 14.
Yeah. And I remember when he was in the, like, in the World Juniors area, and like that, you're right, the knock on him was that he wasn't going to be a big point producer in the NHL. But then I remember looking at the World Juniors, and I believe he'd led both the World Juniors that he played in shots. And that's always something that sticks out to me. Like, if somebody is putting up that kind of volume, usually there's something there. And it might take a little while for them to get to that point in the NHL where those shots turn into goals, but that guy's going to be a goal scorer eventually. And obviously Washington didn't believe that and made one of the worst trades of all time. But yeah, he's really good. I thought he was going to be a little bit better than, or at least offensively, than the general scouting community, I would say, thought he was going to be. But it's crazy when you think about it. Like, it's easy to say with 2020 hindsight now, but how far down he slipped in the draft looks pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And in the draft, it wasn't very good.
And that he was traded from Marty Urat.
Well, yes, that too.
Obviously, yeah. Okay, let's move away from this discussion of my capabilities as a player and get to your number 13 on this list.
All right, 13, I have once again the worst player on his line, David Pastrnak.
Mm, I have him at 12, so we're right there.
Yeah, yeah. We're right in the same range. Yeah, Pastrnak, that's like the least insulting you could be about a player being the worst worst player on their line, because that is, bar none, the best line in the NHL, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, he is ridiculous. You know what's funny? A friend of the podcast, Chris Johnson, on Saturday during Pastrnak's hat trick against Detroit, tweeted about how, you know, he's a superstar and how it's quite a rise from him where he went like 24th or whatever in his draft a couple of years ago. And people took issue with the fact that he called him a superstar. And they're like, you know, oh, look at the guys he's playing with. Like, that's, he's a good player. He's not a great player. And then you just look at sort of his progression over the past couple of seasons, but also just watching and some of the individual efforts he's capable of, and that ridiculous goal he scored the other day where he went, that crossed over between the legs and wound up scoring against the Oilers. He's a freak offensively, man. And he kind of similar to, Ricard Raquel that we were talking about earlier, seems to just be adding an extra gear to his game every season. And I wouldn't be shocked at all this year if he winds up getting into that 40 plus goal range. And yeah, that entire line, man, what an embarrassment of riches. What a fun line to watch, because I'm generally against stacking a line like that. I feel like for roster composition, it's probably better to spread it out, especially in the regular season. But those three guys are just so great together that it's one of those rare exceptions where it might just be better just to keep them full time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you look, even I remember when Pastrnak first broke in the NHL at 18 and he was kind of playing like sporadically, mm-hmm. like already you could tell he was going to be a gamer, right? Like even without that line, he looked fantastic. Like 27 points in his first 46 games as a 18-year-old, I think. He's, man, it's crazy to think that he's just 22. Like, he feels like a veteran because he plays in that line, right? Like, that's a very veteran line. They're, you know, the best two-way line in the league. And he's 22. Like, yeah. that is just crazy to me. And I feel like he feels bigger than he is as well. Like, he's only 6 feet tall, but he gets to spots. He battles through checks. He looks a bit sometimes like a power forward. And I'm just so impressed with him and the high-end skill he has, not just for shooting, but for making little plays in the offensive zone, setting up his teammates. Like, how happy must everyone on that line be to go to work every day? Hmm. You know, yeah. Like, you know, Boston's a good team anyway, but that line, like, just playing on it, you have to just smile every time you're on the ice because you're having fun.
Well, again, that's all that matters, man, having fun regardless of what you're doing. Yeah, no, guys like Laine and Matthews kind of skew our expectations sometimes just because the feats they reach at such a young age are so ridiculous that you sort of comparing everyone else to them diminishes or unfairly views other guys. But yeah, the fact that Pastrnak is only 22 and has already scored 100 goals in the NHL is ridiculous. And yeah, he's one of those guys that made it right after his draft year, which is pretty rare for a guy where he was picked, and he's getting better every season. So he's a heck of a player. Who do you have? Let's round out. Let's get to your top 10. So who do you have as the next couple guys?
Okay. The next couple guys, it actually like physically hurt me to not put them in the top 10, but there's just so many guys. I had Jamie Benn at 12. He's kind of fallen down a little bit for me, and Johnny Gaudreau, who, as great as he is, just like his play without the puck just knocked him right outside the top 10, just on the very edge. He's at 11.
So I had Jamie Benn at 9 and I had Johnny Gaudreau at 7. So, yeah, I'm obviously very even higher than you on those guys, but you're right. If you wanted to bump them down a few spots, it's very feasible just because of some of the names we're going to get to here. But all right, let's take one of those one by one then. Do you want to do Benn first?
Yeah, sure. So Benn is kind of falling down for the same reason as why Sagan didn't finish in my top 20 centers. Both of them are phenomenal players, but for some reason, the last 3 years, all of Dallas's forwards, their transition games have gotten worse and worse each year. I don't know if it's coaching. I would have to, you know, look what's happened so far this year where all of a sudden the Stars look really fun and great again. you know, maybe things have rebounded and I'm punishing them for something that was a coaching decision or a coaching impact. But Ben has not been as impressive for the last couple of years. Is the year that I think he won the Hart Trophy, didn't he? Am I imagining that?
Well, he definitely won the Art Ross. Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely won a scoring title. So, yeah, I feel like it's impossible to keep that level. So saying that he fell down from there is kind of unfair. But I just expect more from Jamie Benn because he's so big, so talented, so good both at playmaking and scoring that it just – my expectations maybe are too high and unfair for him, and that's why he got bumped down. But I expect him to be a higher impact player without the puck and in the neutral zone now that the focus is a little bit different in Dallas.
Right, yeah. I mean, the fact that you know, he probably won't reach those 2015-16 levels where he had 41 goals and 89 points, like, is... You can, both those things can be true, where you can say he's not that player anymore while also acknowledging that he's really freaking good. And yeah. I think it's fair to wonder, like, listen, he's going to turn 30 this summer. And obviously with his kind of body type and the physical nature of his game, like, it makes sense that there'd be some attrition there and wear and tear. And the good thing for him and the Stars is that he is coming from such a lofty level that even if he every year, you know, deteriorates a little bit, he can still be a really, really effective player. So, yeah, I think he's right there. Like, him, Radulov, and Seguin are awesome. I've really enjoyed watching the Stars this season, and I'm so thankful for that because last year was such a slog with that team. And they look back to being, they've already had an amazing game against Winnipeg, and the game against Toronto was really fun. And so I was too low on them in my watchability rankings before the season. Now that I've actually seen them under Jim Montgomery, I'm willing to bump them up. And, yeah, Ben's a big reason for that. As for Goodrow, it's quite the transition. Cause, I guess they're slightly different players, both in stature and how they play, but man, he is right up there. If you're making a list of guys who are the most fun to watch in the league, like, it's going to be a very, very short list before you get to his name.
Yeah, he's so talented. You know what he is? He's like the cheat, not even a cheat code, but do you remember like in the old NHL games, there was always a player who was just like faster than every other player, super small, so you like couldn't really check him. And like you always traded for him, like Marek Zvatos back in like the early 2000s was that guy. And like even in the 90s, it was like Cliff Ronning, and all those games was super awesome. That's like what Johnny Gaudreau is, but in real life, he's so quick. I still think he's the best 3-on-3 player in the NHL. Just that extra space gives him so much more ability to create. He's got speed, finesse, like he's not afraid to get in tight to the net. You know, he's not afraid of a little physical confrontation. The only thing with Gaudreau that I want to see a little bit of improvement in is just his play without the puck. And, you know, like part of that could be, you know, just straight up physical limitation that he can get out muscled too easily. And, you know, you don't want to see him like coming in and being jacked and like sacrificing speed or something just to like win more puck battles, you know, or coming in all top heavy with, you know, like big shoulders and arms and losing his balance or something. You don't want to change his game too much, but it keeps him from being, you know, the top player at his position. Yep. But he's right there anyway.
I was just kind of laughing at the thought of him just coming back one summer, and you know how guys, the cliche of guys being in the best shape of your life, like he just comes back just ridiculously jacked. just like, what the hell is Johnny Gaudreau doing this summer?
He's got a little bit of like Mark Bergevin upper body there.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing for him is you know, he's obviously come into the league at the right time, and even was it last year when they changed the rules towards like the slashes to the hand and stuff, which he was victimized by defensemen by. So like, it's physically, hopefully he'll be able to stay in the lineup and keep playing his game, because when he is firing on all the cylinders, he's ridiculous. And I think if you're skeptical of his capabilities and how high he is on these lists, just ask a guy like Elias Lindholm what it's like to play with him, because after years of below average shooting percentages and not living up to the prospect hype, he looks like he's going to score a ton of goals just riding shotgun with Gaudreau and being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, maybe some changes in Dallas and getting more exciting, I knew that they were scoring a lot, but that top line in Dallas has 27 points in four games.
Yeah, yeah, they are pretty good.
That's good. That's pretty decent.
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, no, I've that's why I had Alex Radulov at 18 or whatever on my list, and Ben's pretty high as well. So let's keep going with your list then. So we've done Ben and Gaudreau. Where are we at in the terms
we're
of the
number
numbers?
10.
Okay. There we go. Number 10. We got a nice little siren to mark the milestone.
That's pretty convenient.
Speaking of Mark, I have Mark Stone next on my list.
Oh, do you? Okay. I have Stone up a little bit higher.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm very high on Mark Stone. And
with good reason.
Yes, for good reason. But number 10, I have Alex Ovechkin, which will get a bunch of people angry at me again. Just like last year.
Yeah, I have a 9 on my list, so I'm right there with you. Where did we? I feel like we were even lower on him last year for some reason.
Well, yeah, I think because we did winger separate last year, I think, and I think I had him 10th among left wingers, or maybe a little bit higher, maybe like in like the 9 or 8 range. I can't recall, but he had a great bounce back year last year. He really started getting more active in the transition game, started attacking off the rush more, which, you know, is partially a consequence of playing with Evgeny Kuznetsov, where you're not just, you know, trying to retrieve pucks and setting up for those cycle chances. Like, you're pretending it's a power play, but it's at even strength. So Ovi kind of played a little bit more like he did in his early 20s. And I was skeptical if he could, you know, keep up that level of skating all season long, but he did. I don't know if he changed his workout regime in the offseason, but he was serious when he said that they weren't going to be suck last year.
Yeah, and he's, I don't want to say like consolidated or bounced back because he's had so many great seasons, but he looks like he's still that same Alex Ovechkin this season. Like he's looked really good. There's definitely no Stanley Cup hangover. There's no negative after effects off of his summer of very intense binge drinking. And he's been great, man. He's one of those guys where even understanding the defensive limitations he still might have, and he might not be sort of, you know, the most well-rounded two-way player as some of these other guys on this list. Like, his unique ability to just, especially when he's on his A game, just like single-handedly take over a game sort of by pure force, and what he's capable of both with the puck and also just kind of hovering around and throwing his body around. And like, he had some of those games in the postseason last year where you're just like, man, this guy, I don't know what he was doing before the game, but it looks like he just did a million Red Bulls because he's just flying around out there and just like not willing to be a bystander, not willing to see his team lose. And so that ability to play that big of a role on over the course of a game is kind of unique to him. Like, there's very few players on this list that have that type of ability. And so, yeah, that he's very well deserving of his spot on our rankings.
Yeah, he actually had his best defensive year last year of the last 4 years, which, you know, it's not a high bar.
It's relative, yes.
Yeah, like he conserves his energy. I think that's like pretty obvious to anybody who's seen him play. But he's just so impressive. The not just the way he plays, but his health, you know, like his entire career outside of suspensions, he's missed something like 15 games. And he throws himself around like a wrecking ball, you know, at high speed. You know, the whole Russian Machine Never Breaks website couldn't have been titled more perfectly, because he's just, I don't know if he's built like an old Soviet tank or something, but he just like, you know, even if he's having an off year, it seems like he just like, you know, smacks himself on the leg and he'll score 50 again. Like, and again, this is a guy that an off year, we're talking about a 33 goal season and pushing 70 points.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's just unbelievable. I don't think we'll ever see a player quite like Ovechkin again. Between the shot volume, the ability to just blow through guys, it's unbelievable. Like, I have said that like 5 times, but he's just such a special player, and we're lucky to be able to watch him. You know what I mean? Like, watch him play in his prime. I hope he scores 50 again this year. I just want him to I want him to push Gretzky's goal scoring record. That's what I want from him the rest of his career.
Yeah, well, just based on the consistency and longevity, obviously eventually he will slow down a little bit, but like I said with Ben, his where he's been at and his peak is so high that even if he drops down a little bit, he'll still be scoring in the 30s for at least a couple more seasons. So I think I kind of highlighted as I think it was 800 goals or so as a realistic benchmark, which I believe would kind of bump him into that right there behind Gretzky for second, which is just ridiculous, especially given the era he's playing in. He's in my mind easily the most lethal goal scorer ever when you kind of account for the time he's been playing in. Let's keep going. Let's hammer through this top 10. We're already at 70, okay. 75 minutes.
Okay, so you want to just throw out the names?
Yeah, let's just do that and then we'll get into them, because I feel like at this point we pretty much have the same names left over for the most part.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so at 9 I've got Blake Wheeler. Mm-hmm. 8 is Tarasenko. 7 is Claude Giroux. 6 is Mark Stone. 5 is Patrick Kane. 4 is Artemi Panarin. 3, Brad Marchand. 2, reigning MVP Taylor Hall. And 1 is Nikita Kucherov.
Yeah, so I have Kucherov 1, Taylor Hall 2, and then I have Patrick Kane, Brad Marchand, or Artemi Panarin as my top 5. So,
right. So same guys,
pretty much there, yeah. Different order. Yes. Yeah. Okay, let's go through most of those guys. Who out of that bunch is the most interesting? Because I feel like, especially with Kucherov and Hall, it's those guys are really good. They put up a lot of points and they dominate the game. So,
well, and we've already talked about Marchand a fair bit as well.
But you know what though, Marchand, I was looking at this when I was doing a bit of my research for this. Since the start of 2016-17, so the past 2+ seasons or whatever, only Kucherov, McDavid, and Malkin have more points per game than him, which is just insane, right? We've talked about this, but he was still an effective player, and I thought he'd have a long role in this league, but I never envisioned this type of upside from him and the heights he's reached as both a goal scorer and a playmaker. I guess no one really could have reasonably seen it coming based on how his career has started.
Yeah, well, I remember when that second breakout season that he had, because he broke out into a first line player back in 2011. But in 2016-17, when he scored 85 points, I was like, wow, that's an incredible season. But he'll never do that again. Mm. And then last season, he put up 85 points in 68 games. Brad, how are you doing this? Mm. And already this season, 10-5. So he's on the way to getting there again. So. Yeah. He's pretty special. Mm-hmm. It's too bad that he can't, not be a jerk.
Yeah.
Apparently he's become quite the nice guy off the ice and is quite progressive and does a lot of work for charity. So that helps. But on the ice,
stop licking people. Just stop licking people. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. No more reasonable expectations.
No more bridging. No more jumping people because they celebrated a goal.
Yeah.
But outside of Marchand, I think Stone is always interesting for me because he's great offensively. Maybe not top 5 great, or he's not going to compete with the Tarasenkos or Wheelers in terms of point production, but he's close. But he's the best defensive winger in the game. He's Patrice Bergeron on the wing to me. His ability to strip opponents of possession, take those loose pucks, transition them back up the ice. He's just really incredible. And somehow, despite the fact that he's put up great point production and it has kind of been on an island in Ottawa and, he gets a fair amount of attention, he's still kind of underrated around the NHL.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's just because those point totals and goal totals in particular haven't necessarily reached the heights of some of these other guys on this list. So for your casual mainstream fan, maybe when you're just sorting by those counting stats, he's not going to pop up at the top of it, so you're not going to think of him conventionally as that type of guy. But yeah, his ability to take the puck away from guys and his defensive prowess, especially in the neutral zone, is already well documented at this point, and he's a heck of a player. I'm very curious to see what the future holds for him and where he'll be playing and how maybe a potential change of scenery or just playing with better players will impact those point totals, and maybe he has even another gear in him if he's in a more competitive setting. But that's a discussion for another day. Some of the other guys, Tarasenko, I feel like we talked about him a bit when we were talking about Schwartz. He's
right there below Ovechkin in terms of like just the most consistent goal scorers. I feel like 35 to 40 is just money in the bank. You can write it in with a Sharpie and he's going to get there. And maybe now playing with a playmaker and a dominant center like Ryan O'Reilly might even take his game to another level, hopefully. So I'm very curious to see what his end of year production looks like after this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to ask you a question. Do you think Claude Giroux's bounce back season last year is for real enough that he's going to be like a top end producer again this year? Because this guy, like, this is super interesting to me. This, like, this move to the wing, like, at first I kind of like turned up my nose a little bit at it, because whenever you put a center on the wing, usually, you know, their production goes down because they kind of thrive on being involved in the middle of the ice. But Giroux all of a sudden went from, you know, 58 points the season before to 102, his best season of all, like, his entire career, best goal scoring season as well. But obviously his shooting percentage was quite high. So I don't think anybody expects another 100 point season out of him, but I feel like, you know, 80, if he plays at the same level, is not out of the question. But he was by far the biggest mover of all the players that I looked at over the last 3 years in terms of where their career was going and trending and what they did last year. It was just, he was on a fairly linear decline the last few seasons. And then he just all of a sudden was back up to peak Giroux, like the best numbers of his career by every category.
Well, I think part of it was health too, right? I think it was like he had a very mangled wrist, and you could see that in terms of both the shot volume and his willingness to shoot, but also where he was shooting it from. And it felt like, I believe every year for like three seasons or so, he had been like moving further and further away from the net. And it was just an interesting trajectory for him. And then obviously, yeah, when it's fair to be a bit kind of hesitant to fully buy in when a guy has one season that just kind of turns back the clock as far as it did. But it makes sense with everything lining up. Like, Couturier is so good defensively down the middle that it makes sense that alleviating some of that and freeing him up to be more of an offensive playmaker would jive well with him. And it's credit to him, because I feel like, especially with the top players, like, don't you feel like generally they don't accept that type of a switch? Like, it feels like these top guys sort of take pride in playing down the middle and all of that responsibility that comes with it and sort of the gravitas of it. And whenever we hear about potentially moving to the wing or being asked to play a different role, there's like a lot of pushback and a lot of pride and ego gets in the way. And with him, he was like, yeah, like, that makes a ton of sense. I'm sure Couturier being as good as he is helps a lot with that transition, but, you know, that power play is awesome. So I wouldn't be shocked at all to see him once again hovering amongst the top 5 to 10 point getters in the league with 80 plus points. Like, I think that's a pretty reasonable expectation for him, assuming health.
Yeah, and I feel like that's, you mentioned it, but it's really something to admire about him that he didn't put up a big fuss. You know, like with a coach who, you know, a lot of people in Philly have questioned fairly openly about, you know, some of the decisions that he's made, and Giroux just bought in. It kind of reminded me when Patrick Marleau was put on the wing a few years ago, and I think that really extended his career as well, because he was kind of, you know, and he has declined, obviously. He's 38 or 39 now, I think, but he's still got the speed and he can still put pucks in the net, so he's still a pretty good hockey player. And I feel like maybe that's what we're seeing with Giroux here, is a bit of, you know, adding some longevity to his career by taking on a less stressful role. But maybe this is, you know, it's kind of the same thing and not even worth mentioning, but, you know, we talked about with Giroux the injury history, and I feel like he might have had something with his hip as well during that.
Yeah, his mobility for sure was down.
Yeah, so I wonder, you know, how much we talk about like aging curves and stuff like that, how much of it is cumulative injury and not necessarily just getting older. But I guess, like, you know, part of getting older is
getting more injured. Yeah,
injured or like a little bit easier, right? I mean, anybody who hits the 30 mark and tries to get off of a couch will tell you that.
Okay, here's a fun question for you then. With Kucherov, like I said last year at some point, and I do stand by this, I think with him, it's, and this is a testament to just the levels he's reached, because it's really tough for wingers to vault themselves into this status. But like, for me, when you're talking about him and his place in the game and sort of ranking him against his peers, like, I view his peers as that McDavid Crosby group of guys, as opposed to the other guys that play his position. Like, when I was doing this list, it was just immediately I wrote Kucherov at number one, and then I started filling it out after that. And I don't know. He's just so damn good, man. That I view him as his competition is the best players in the league, regardless of whether they're playing center or defense, and not necessarily just lumping him in with the other wingers.
Yeah, he was quite the far gap ahead of the next best winger when I was putting everything together, mm-hmm. which is crazy because I actually thought last year, like, there was a lot of buzz about him for the Hart Trophy in like the mid-season time, and then it kind of cooled down near the end of the year, and it seemed like it was Victor Hedman who got the award for Tampa Bay's great season.
Yep.
But Kucherov was their best player all year. The one thing that held him off of like my fake awards ballot, because I don't have one, was the fact that he was actually maybe I could be wrong, because last time I looked into it, the season wasn't over, but he was actually a negative in rel goals. And I feel like if you're on your team's top line, you're having a season like that, and you know, part of it is just bad luck. But if you look at previous Hart Trophy winners, except for Corey Perry, they're all like way, way above team average. So you have to really stand out in like actual goals. Because when the season's over, we're not talking about, you know, predictive stats anymore. It's what did you actually do? So for me, that held him off. But then when you actually break down the total impact of play, he was actually still at the top. So like maybe he should have been on the Hart ballot there. Mm-hmm. So he's a confusing one for me, because I feel like sometimes the on-ice stats don't do justice to how great he is.
Right.
Which is strange with a player that good, because usually they do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like leaving him off your Hart ballot last year is just kind of a testament to how many good candidates there were last year, and it was just such an epic season up top. So like saying he was the fifth or sixth or seventh or whatever most valuable player is perfectly fine. And I don't want to get into a whole Hart discussion debate, but yeah, obviously like playing on a great team and having a second line with Braden Point on it, like that's going to affect your relative totals a little bit, and guys get knocked for saying they're not as valuable to your team because there's other great players around. But it's pretty clear that out of the bunch, Kucherov is the best and most important, and his presence on the ice is a huge factor to Tampa Bay's success. And kind of like what we were talking about with Line A, in terms of I feel like Kucherov generally started out or was thought of as being a trigger man and sort of being a lethal shooter, and then now he's really over the past couple of seasons become this dominant playmaker and sort of soaking in the defensive attention and then feeding it to other guys and making lives easier for them. And that's sort of, that's like the highest level you can reach as a dominant offensive player, when you can not just do it for yourself, but also make it so much easier for those around you.
Yeah. And he's another guy that for the last 3 years has had that linear progression where he just keeps getting better. Right.
Yep.
So I'm excited to see what he can do this year, because, you know, obviously he's very keyed on. He was last year after his 85 point season the year before, where he scored 40 goals. I think that he could again, you know, I think he could easily have another 100 point season. I think Stamkos has more to give as well. You know, his shooting percentage has dropped a little bit, and maybe that could be a bit of decline in this game. But with playing with a guy like Kucherov, who can move the puck as well as Kucherov, I feel like there's no excuse for Stamkos not scoring, you know, 40 goals. You know, I think he can hit that. And then if that line clicks and they have a great power play again, watch out. You know, like Tampa Bay is so stacked at every position. It's not fair, really.
Yeah, they're pretty good. They're Tampa Bay's got some skill on their team. If there's anything you take away from that podcast, let it be that. all right, Andrew, let's get out of here. So people can follow you on Twitter at Andrew Berkshire. They could check out all your work at Sportsnet, and you're writing about the Jets these days for the Winnipeg Free Press. What was it?
Indeed.
Yes. Yep. And I'm going to have you back on to Rank the Defenseman, I think sometime early next week. So people can look forward to that. Go check out the Centers podcast we did last week. And that's going to be it for today. So thanks again for taking the time, Andrew, and we will chat next week.
My pleasure. Can't wait, buddy.
Have a good one.
The Hockey Pediocast with Dmitry Filipovich. Follow on Twitter at Dim Filipovich and on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/hockeypediocast.